Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We've got three fascinating interviews for you this week. First off, we chat with our relationship coach, Frank B. Kermit, about how to get over an ex. This is never easy, but especially difficult if you've been with that person for a very long time. We then speak with etiquette expert Karen Cleveland about how to properly behave at the gym, and that includes no naked parades in the locker room. We then chat with celebrity blogger Mark Andrew about what it's like to deal with Hollywood and all the glitz and glam that goes along with it. And we round things out with an excellent remix from Jennifer Lopez, Poppy.
Capture your need for sound.
No matter when it happens, ending a romantic relationship is never easy, but that's not even the most difficult part of the journey. It feels like the real work comes in after the storm is over and you have to move on with your life alone. And you may have problems letting go of your ex and everything that person brought to your life. To give us some advice on how to work through this challenging time is our relationship coach, Frank B. Kermit. Frank, thanks for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Great to be here again.
Frank, what is the most important thing to remember as you launch yourself into getting over your ex?
The most important thing to remember is that the world doesn't stop just because you have a broken heart. The world is going to move on. People are going to get on with their lives through their own ups and downs. And what tends to happen when people go through this process of dealing with their own broken heart is that when they finally come out of this cloud, they're surprised at how much life around them has changed. They don't tend to grow as individuals. They don't tend to grow as people because they're stuck in a time period of when they were in their last relationship.
I know that a lot of people actually decide when they are no longer with a person that they're going to stop frequenting places that they used to go as a couple, like a certain restaurant or a club. Is this a good idea?
Bad idea. Absolutely bad idea. When you break up with somebody, the best thing that you can do is to actually go to those spots again with new people that you're seeing. So let's say you and your partner were at a particular restaurant and you went there every week. As soon as you have someone new to date, go to that restaurant. This is going to help you by creating new memories that you associate with specific places. Now at first, yes, being in those environments are going to trigger some memories of your ex. However, over time, the more you visit those locations and go through those same actions with new people, the less impact each event will have on you because you're going to associate a number of new memories with that place. It won't change how you feel about your ex. It is going to change your ability to function day to day when being presented with reminders of the things you and your ex used to do.
Frank, I have to tell you, I think that's a very important piece of advice because I know in my own experience after a particular breakup years ago, I had been very attached to this person and so many places reminded me, you know, of them. And I was determined, though, to keep going, not knowing at the time why, but I had seen some other friends say, well, I never go back there because, you know, he and I used to go there, so I'm not doing it. And I was like, if I do that, there's going to be no places for me to go in my town. So
that's right, because eventually every place is going to remind you of some ex, and that's not why we're here. We're here to enjoy our lives. And yes, when you date somebody, of course, there's going to be the risk that you're going to break up. And that risk is pretty high. And when that happens, you have to be able to manage it. So let's say you and your ex used to frequent, for people living in Montreal, there's Mount Royal. It's a beautiful place to visit. If you don't ever go to Mount Royal again, that means at some point when you're in a car driving through Mount Royal, maybe on the bus passing it, or you happen to show up at some event that's being held at Mount Royal, you're going to be struggling with what's called a core hurt, a memory of your ex at Mount Royal. However, if every time you date somebody new, you make it a point to say, okay, I've been seeing this person for 2 weeks. It's time for our Mount Royal date. Eventually, being on Mount Royal is not going to be a negative trigger for you. It's going to be actually a positive one because that's where you take almost every person you see.
And Frank, it's not like you're disrespecting your ex either, and not that they would matter at that point, but it's just you enjoying a place and you want to continue going there.
Exactly. Look, the only way you could truly disrespect an ex is if you're bad-mouthing your ex. If you're telling everybody what a horrible person your ex was, that's being disrespectful. But to go to a place that you enjoy with someone new in your life, being, you know, moving on with your life, that's not being disrespectful to your ex at all. And if your ex has issues with that, if your ex comes up to you and say, hey, how come you've taken somebody new to that place that we used to frequent, this is emotional abuse.
I think that's excellent, Frank. I just think people really need to take this specific point in, because I know, again, in my own experience, I am completely I am completely proud of the fact that I didn't shut down, because now, you know, I can go anywhere I want, you know, in Montreal, because again, this is where we live, and I'm fine with it, with whoever I'm with, because I think also it translates, now I know this is slightly off topic, but I think it also translates into how you handle things in life, no matter what it is. Like, even per se, if you lose someone in your life, like they pass away, I find so many people don't want to go back to that place or this place or that place, because that's where I used to go with my dad or whatever. But if you can get through that with a breakup, no matter what else comes up in your life with losing someone, I feel if you've gone through it with the breakup, you can handle it later on.
Absolutely. Now let's make some comparisons. When you're dealing with a breakup and you're dealing with the loss of a loved one through death, a lot of the grieving process is still the same. There's one key difference, though. Because death is final, there isn't any hope of rekindling. There isn't any hope that maybe you and your ex are going to rekindle again and meet up again in the future, and who knows. Because there's that lack of hope of being with that person again, because, of course, when they die, you're not going to be with that person again, it adds a different dynamic to it. So part of getting over that grieving process is to come to terms with what's called the new normal. Now, this is what's similar in both cases, whether you're dealing with a romantic breakup or you're dealing with the death of a loved one. The new normal is that first year or two where you're going through the motions, and it's that first anniversary that comes up, that first family gathering that person's not there, that first, you know, if you and your ex had a very particular day that you celebrated together, the first Valentine's Day you're not together. All of these firsts make up the new normal, because you have to get used to the fact that your ex is not going to continue to be a part of your life. The same way that the person that you lost through death will not be there and will not continue to be part of that life. The first time that something happens and you think, oh, I really should call so-and-so about it, and then you remember, wait a minute, so-and-so's gone. Whether it's an ex from a romantic relationship or whether it's somebody who's died. And it's just getting used to these new behavior patterns, these new realizations. This is the pain of loss. And getting used to the new normal, it's not to say that, oh, it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. Your pain is very real. Your pain is very relevant. It's just that you get used to not having that person there. And after the first year, where you have the first time that you've gone without that person for all significant dates, it gets easier, only because you're more used to it. A lot of the pain people feel when they have lost someone, whether romantically or through death, is the fact that they're so used to having that person there that the pain of change is on top of the natural grieving process. So it's very important to remember that a lot of the pain that you're in is because you're experiencing the new normal. Once you get comfortable with the new normal, you're in a better position to deal with your actual grief.
Okay. Joining us on the show is relationship coach and columnist for the West End Times, Frank B. Kermit. Check him out on his website, www.franktalks.com. Frank, what about the what-if game? If I had done this or if they had done that, you know, we'd still be together.
Okay, look, we're human beings. And everybody is going to try to look at a situation and see, how could I have better controlled it? Now, yes, in some cases, maybe you needed to learn a lesson. For example, well, what if I just didn't cheat on my partner, they wouldn't have left me? Or maybe it's another question. Maybe if I was more attentive to my partner, things would have worked out. So, yes, there are opportunities to learn and try to better yourself so that when you get into new relationships, you don't make mistakes of the past. However, and this is very important, you can't beat yourself up about it, because chances are that that person wouldn't have been in your future long term. And the reason I say this is because those couples that truly have what it takes to last a lifetime wouldn't let anything break them up. Maybe it's an issue of maturity. Maybe it's an issue that they've reached a point in their life where they're a bit more understanding. But if it didn't work out, if the two of you broke up now, chances are there were other issues, not just the one that broke you up, but there were other things going on where that didn't keep you together, for lack of a better term.
And Frank, that behavior, though, of the what-if game, though, that is a normal part of breakup, though, right? Like needing to go through that point, I guess?
Of course it's a normal part of the breakup process. It's a good process in the sense that it gives you an idea of what it is you can learn from your past relationship. However, to be holding on to that, saying, well, if things had been just a little different, we would have survived and we would have been together today. Well, not necessarily. Most of the time, the one incident that breaks two people up isn't the only reason they've separated. There are couples who will split up after an act of infidelity. There are other couples where the act of infidelity isn't what breaks them up. In fact, there's an act of infidelity, they deal with it, and the relationship survives, and it has to change and modify. It's never the one thing that happens that usually creates the breakup, but a number of the things that happen beforehand, the buildup.
Okay.
So, you know, as human beings, it's just easier to say, well, we broke up because of that one issue. Well, chances are it wasn't that one issue. Chances are it was a number of smaller issues that, with that one issue, became too much.
Okay. So the important fact for people to keep in their heads, though, is, you know, it's okay to go through the what-if game with yourself, but don't stay stuck there.
Exactly. Because the bottom line is, if it was meant to be, you would still be together. And that's something you have to remember. If you really want to see, you really want a sign of whether or not that person was your soulmate for life, well, here's the sign. They would have stuck around.
Right. That's excellent,
Frank. If they didn't stick around, they're not your soulmate for life.
Perfect. Now, does the fact that you have, or the fact that you may have planned a future with, you know, this specific ex, does it make it more difficult to get past them?
This is one of the most overlooked areas of getting over a breakup. I'm so glad you brought this up. Look, as human beings, we all like to plan our futures. And if we've been involved with somebody very seriously, we start to imagine what the future is going to be like. Maybe having kids, going through the process of a wedding, maybe going through the process of having grandkids with that person, or if just finding ways to share your life, where the two of you are going to retire to, where you're going to live, the lifestyle, the business the two of you are going to open up. There are so many things that we start to imagine. Here's the key understanding. There is the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. The conscious mind knows the difference between reality and fantasy. The subconscious mind does not know the difference between reality and fantasy. So my conscious mind can say, I was with my ex for a year and a half, but my fantasies of us being together forever, growing old together, dying together, all of that, I understand that it's a fantasy with my conscious mind. My unconscious mind doesn't get that. The subconscious says, well, no, the 18 months you were together existed, and all these fantasies, they existed too. Part of what we mourn isn't just the 18-month relationship we actually had. We also have to mourn the fantasies and the future that we've built up in our minds. And we have to pay homage to that and put that to rest as well. Okay. I'll give you a very specific example from my own life. One of the things that I had to do to heal from the loss of my ex-fiance was that I had to find closure and I had to mourn for the entire future that I built up for us, which included us having kids. So I literally had to mourn the loss of children that I never had. Even though I understand consciously, well, those kids never existed. Those kids and their kids and families and all raising them, all of that stuff never actually existed. But because I imagined it, I had to mourn its loss.
And Frank, could this specific issue, without you even knowing it, because I think sometimes, you know, like this specific issue of the fantasy, if we want to call it that, I think a lot of people don't recognize that that is going on. So could this specific issue hold you back even longer from getting over someone? Because I feel like some people might be like, you know, why am I not over that person? Like, I feel like I should be.
Exactly. And I can tell you that I ended up holding on to my ex-fiance for almost 7 years. And that whole experience is what prompted me to learn about relationships, which eventually led me to becoming a relationship coach. So, yes, if you haven't mourned the potential future that you kept fantasizing about, you're still dealing with that core hurt. You're still dealing with that pain. And that's probably a very significant reason why you might not be over an ex. Because although you can mourn the actual relationship and say, well, I know the relationship is over and I've moved on, but there's still a part of me that's just in pain and is longing. It's because you haven't mourned that future you built up in your head about you and that ex. Sometimes an ex might become even more important months, if not years, after the relationship has ended. Not because they're even significantly in your life, but because of all of that stuff that you imagined about with them in the future is becoming more and more significant, because you're also feeling on some level, oh, you know, it was around this time that something should be happening in my life. Well, it's something that you had fantasized about with an ex, and so you feel that there's something missing and it's connected to that person. Well, I must be in love with that person. That person has to be the one, and I missed the boat. Not necessarily. It might be that you just built up this potential future with an ex, and it's not real, but you still have to go through the mourning process of that future.
I think that's just a very, again, important point. So I hope that people listening take that one in as well. Now, Frank, is there an underlying layer, you know, to your ex that you must also get over, like the fact of what you think they may have brought to your life, whether it's real or not?
What do you mean, an underlying layer?
Let's say you were not in a good space when you met them with your own self-esteem or something. And then you met this person, and then all of a sudden you started to feel confident and all this kind of stuff. And maybe it was just you also starting to get to that point on your own, but you associate your newfound confidence with this person. If you don't make it, could you start to feel like, again, maybe not, you know, your self-confidence has gone?
Oh, I totally get what you're saying. In cases like that, you're making your ex a symbol. What we do sometimes is that when things start developing in our own lives and we happen to be dating somebody at the same time, we may associate all those things happening with an ex. For example, it may just be a period of time where you've got a promotion at work, you're feeling more confident, you're making more money, things are going your way, everybody in your family is healthy, and you start feeling so amazing, and you happen to be dating somebody, and of course, all that positive energy translates into your relationship. You might mistake your ex as a symbol for a great time in your life. And when that relationship is over, if that ex had become a symbol for something and you lose that symbol, that can affect how you interpret yourself. So, another example of this is that some people are very lonely, some people are very down on themselves. They start dating someone and they feel great. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm dating this person. This person is in my life. Well, you're great with or without that person. You might not realize it until that person is there to show you, hey, so you are lovable. And this is something that happens to people who don't have a lot of experience with relationships. That first real significant relationship, that's the tangible proof that they are lovable. Because up until that point, it's all theory. Up until that point, well, I know I'm a great person, I guess. People tell me that I'm great. People tell me I'm nice. But I've never been in a relationship, so I've never had someone prove to me that I'm lovable. Someone's come into my life. They are the proof that I'm lovable. They are the symbol that I'm lovable. Well, when that relationship ends, I got news for you. You're still lovable. You just may not feel it because that symbol, that reminder that you're lovable is now gone. Here's the problem. If your ex is your only symbol that you are lovable, then you're going to start to feel unlovable because your ex is not there, as opposed to realizing that it wasn't that person specifically. It's the overall metaframe of you were able to attract one person, therefore it's only natural that we can believe that you'll be able to attract someone new. And the fact is, there may already be people attracted to you that want to date you, but you're still too much in your own head to even acknowledge them.
On the show with us this week is our relationship coach and columnist for the West End Times, Frank B. Kermit. Again, check out his website, www.franktalks.com. How do you know when you should start going out on dates with other people? Because I know that as much as, you know, friends want to tell you, oh, just go have a fling or a one night stand, it's going to help you get over things. I think most people, if they have sort of some decency in them and just a good moral character, I think that, you know, no one, I mean, it's one thing if you want to just go have a one night, you know, fling or whatever, and the other person is well aware of that. But I think most people, if they are getting over a breakup, don't really want to go use someone to help get through their own pain, you know, getting over this ex.
Okay, well, my general rule is that as long as you're not looking to take out your frustrations on a new person that you couldn't take out on your ex, that's when you're ready to start dating again. So if you're still really angry at your ex and you're out looking for revenge, and you're just going to take it out on the next person you date, that's a very unethical and very emotionally unhealthy thing to do. The most dangerous part is that it can become a repeating behavior pattern. People who go out seeking revenge, well, person A hurt me, I'm going to take it out on person B. This is a repeating behavior pattern, and it's never satisfying. You can never feel satisfied because no matter how many people you hurt, it doesn't alleviate the pain that person A may have caused, because you're not getting revenge on person A. Let me go a step further. Even if you do take revenge on person A, it still is probably going to be as empty as you've ever felt, because revenge can't replace the lack of love that you feel. I also want to make a point about going out and having flings or just going out and having fun. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with going out and having a one-night stand if that's what you choose. There's nothing wrong with finding a friend that you want to have a friends with benefits relationship if that's what you choose. As long as the other people involved understand that you're not looking for something long-term, you're not looking for a relationship, you just want to have some fun, you want to have a bit of a distraction, you want to get out there and get into some new habits of dating, as long as you're ethical and honest about that, there's nothing wrong with going out and finding some intimacy.
Yeah, I think that's great, Frank, because like, I think that is the barometer. As long as the other person knows and is not being led on by you for something that's not going to materialize. So that's good to sort of point out. And I wanted to ask you as well, when dealing with the post-breakup, as it were, should you actually spend time with your ex?
You know, I get this question a lot. What if me and my ex are friends? And it's great that you're ending on an amicable note. I commend you. If you're ending and you're amicable with one another, that's fantastic. But if you need to get used to the new normal, constantly being around your ex is not going to help that situation. Here's the worst part about constantly hanging out with your ex, even after a breakup. It is going to interfere with your capacity to involve someone new in your life. And those people that I have coached over the years, and you know, so they'll have a breakup, they'll still be friends with their ex, and their ex will be a constant part of their life. They may even still hang out with their ex as friends in a non-sexual capacity. But they can't understand why they're struggling to meet someone new. Well, constantly hanging out with an ex, even in a platonic dynamic, is taking time away from you being able to meet and spend time with new people. Plus, anybody who's truly a worthwhile potential partner, someone that you could build a future with, I got news for you. A high-value person would not tolerate their partner being so close and spending so much time with one of their own exes. Why? Because a high-value person would think to themselves, well, wait a minute. If they're such good friends, why aren't they together? If they're not together and they're such good friends, well, it's still a threat to the potential relationship and future I want to build with this person. I'm not going to bother.
Frank, how do you finally put the situation to rest, you know, so that mentally and emotionally you can move on from this particular relationship?
If you really want to put it to rest, get over your ex, you have to find closure. The process of finding closure is to learn everything you can about that past relationship and get to the point where you can trust yourself not to make those same mistakes again. When you get to that point, when you get to the point where you can say, I can trust myself not to make those mistakes, that's different from knowing the mistakes you made. So we'll take a really specific example here. You cheated on your ex. You feel terrible about it. Now, you learned what not to do. I learned not to cheat on my ex or my partner at the time. However, are you at a point where so much of you has changed, where you've really grown as a person? Are you at the point in your life where you can trust yourself to never do that again? Once you reach that point where you can trust yourself to never do that again, that is when you're truly able to forgive yourself. And through forgiving yourself is how you're going to find closure on a past relationship.
Frank, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for this advice. I really think that so many of us are going to take away from it. And again, hopefully, really sort of take a look at ourselves and put this advice to good use.
I can tell you that a large percentage of my client base who come to me for relationship coaching, getting over a past relationship, getting over a past hurt, is a major significant source of their current intimacy issues, of why they have met somebody very special, but they're not able to really commit or connect with them. And it comes up so much that I take every opportunity I can to educate people about how to deal with an ex.
Perfect. Frank, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. You take care. Looking forward to next time.
That's Frank B. Kermit, again, our relationship coach and columnist for the West End Times newspaper. For more information, again, check him out, www.franktalks.com.
Cause no one's hurt me more than you.
reason for what is sometimes called the January joiners. These are the good folks who decided as their New Year's resolution to get in shape for the year ahead. So they inundate gyms around the world in their quest to become svelte and sexy. This phenomenon usually upsets the balance of things because, unlike the rest of the year, gyms are now very crowded with these excess exercisers. To help us navigate through the extra sweat so we can stay civilized is Toronto-based etiquette columnist, advisor, and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. Karen, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you here, Karen. And I wanted to ask you, what is it about being in a gym that makes for, I guess, a tense environment, especially in January and February?
For sure. Well, first of all, I commend anyone for getting to the gym. Good for you. And whether you're there working up a sweat for 15 minutes and you're new to the scene or you've been going for 2 hours a day religiously forever, good on you. It's time well spent. So round of applause. But certainly you've touched on something. The gym can be an intimidating environment. It's a really busy place. It's sort of forced confinement with strangers or maybe familiar faces that you see, but it's not really like you're hanging out with your friends. For the most part, people aren't really there to socialize. We all sort of do our own thing, whether we work out alone or maybe with a gym buddy. But there's a couple contributing factors. I mean, you're sweating in front of strangers.
Yes.
You're typically wearing less clothing or certainly more casual clothing than you're typically used to. There are mirrors everywhere. So it's just a perfect storm of variables that can make people feel a bit insecure.
Okay. And what are some, I guess, basic etiquette ground rules then when you are at the gym?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that for sure for some people, and for most people, I would say, being at the gym is a insular activity. So people are there to get in, do their thing, and go. Chit-chat happens everywhere, and that's lovely. But for the most part, it's not a really social environment. So that's key, is just to recognize sort of the ground rules. The change room is not your place to have a personal naked parade. It's purely functional. Get in, get changed, and get out. We've all been in the room where there's an awkward person sort of having a party of one in their birthday suit. So I feel like I'd be remiss not to address that the change room certainly falls under the auspices of good gym etiquette. I think as well that if someone is working out in between a few machines, it's perfectly acceptable to ask if you can work in or ask how many sets they have left. That's great. What's not great, however, is staring them down, looking at your watch, tapping your feet. It's a democratic space. Everyone deserves to be there and be on those machines as much as the next person. So it's important to be respectful of someone finishing up their sets. But certainly, to ask to work in, totally fine. Kelly, you mentioned to me that you spend a lot of time in the gym, so I'm sure music is important to you. Mm-hmm. I know it certainly is for me. So your choice of music while you're at the gym, for everybody, is just that. It's your music. So no one else needs to hear what you run to or what gets you jazzed when you're in the gym. It's your music. So earbuds in, please and thank you. The gym that I used to work at, a particular patron would come in with her docking station and blast 90s house music at top volume. And no matter how far I jammed my earbuds into my ears and no matter how loud I turned up my music, I could hear hers perfectly clearly, and it really cramped my style, and I'm sure everyone else's. And just as I was ready to address it, someone else beat me to the punch. So I'm grateful I didn't have to
wow.
Feel that one. But it's a bold assumption to assume that everyone wants to hear what you're listening to. And unless the gym has asked you to personally step up as a DJ, your music is just your own. I think that's important. Some other good ground rules is people cross paths all the time. So you might chit-chat with someone in the water cooler or by the water cooler or if you're starting or leaving a class. But it's not a social environment. It's not a bar. So it's casual chit-chat's fine. But beyond that, you know, quick pleasantries are great and probably enough. My most important tip and one that I stand by and I'm quite effusive about is wiping down equipment after you've used it. Anything that has been sweated on needs to be properly spritzed and sanitized and wipe down, full stop. And if you notice someone who's at your gym who's maybe not abiding by this, a subtle way to address it is the next time you're done wiping down your equipment, you can either leave the spray bottle near them or put it in their sight line, just sort of nudge them towards what's protocol there. You're just being helpful, right? And then I think to wrap up really, Kelly, the most important tip is if you see someone breaking every single etiquette rule in the book and you're horrified, there's a lovely old saying that says the real test of good manners is putting up with bad manners pleasantly. So So be cautious that you're not cramping anyone else's style while you're at the gym, and carry on and let people do their thing.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. Joining us on the show right now, etiquette expert, advisor, and blogger, RashidaTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. You can check her out on Twitter, at School Finishing. Karen, I actually just wanted to follow up on a few of the things you mentioned. With regards to the not wiping down, I think that's gross, as you mentioned. Should it ever come to a point where you actually physically have to tell the person? Because I know you said nudge, but sometimes I feel people are dumb.
There's some dum-dums out there, Kevin. We have to remember, if you're going to address something one-on-one with someone, odds are if you're a regular gym goer, you're going to bump into this person several times in the next coming week. So you might be setting yourself up for an awkward exchange. Mm-hmm. You could either address it with a gym owner and have them sign their post-it all over, so you'd hope that people sort of get it. It also might just be a matter of someone learning protocol. Maybe they're new to a gym and this is their first go-around. So a more subtle way to address it and give them the benefit of the doubt is probably a great way to start, and then let someone else fight the good fight.
Okay, excellent. I think that's a good idea, actually, to go to the gym management so that you're not sort of caught in the middle, like you said, and then having to see this person on a regular basis. I think that's great, too. And also to the music question, like you said, you had that lady that was, or that person who was blasting the 90s house music. Sometimes I find, though, people are even blasting their music out of their headphones, and it's ridiculous. Is there anything to be done with that?
Absolutely. I think a nice way to address that is in a really sort of humble, certainly polite way, and just to ask someone, you know, a good way to open it up is say, I know I have no right to ask, but would you mind just turning down your volume a couple notches, even with mine at full volume, I can hear what you're listening to, because really they have every right to listen to their music as much as you do. They might not realize that that it's impeding on you.
Okay, that's fair. Now, something else as well, you know, I actually refuse to go to the gym after 4 p.m. on a weekday because I find it, no matter which gym I've been at, and I've gone to several different, you know, branches of them or kinds or whatever, I find without a doubt, no matter which one you're at, it becomes a meat market after 4 p.m. With everyone checking each other out. That's why I'm kind of like an early morning person. Like, I try to go early when there's like 12 of you in the gym at all times. I find it very disruptive when it is a meat market. Is there a way to handle it so that you're not uncomfortable?
That's a really great question. And unfortunately, it's a reality that there can be some creepy leering going on in the gym.
Yes.
And it's not, as I mentioned, even though it's sort of a quasi-social space, really people are there not to socialize, but to do their thing and work out and get out of there. So if there is someone who is maybe trying to chat you up, it's perfectly acceptable to let them know that you're there on tight timelines, and maybe let them know that you've got another 15 minutes left in your run or another 3 sets you want to finish up. I also sometimes, if I want to visually give a cue that I don't want to be bothered, I leave one earbud in.
Nice.
It sends a visual cue that you've got things to do.
Perfect. I love it. Now, what do you do also with people who don't respect the time limit on machines? Because that is also something that drives me bonkers.
Again, that's a really challenging thing. I know this. I see that all the time, Kelly. It's so frustrating, isn't it? Because everyone really wants to get in and make the most of their time. So are you referencing people who go over? Yeah, I know, especially at peak times in the gym. That's really annoying. Again, I would leave that up to the person whose responsibility is to manage those machines and just voice your frustrations, and really that's their concern. If it's something that carries on, you really might want to question if this is a great place to be working out and if your time and your money is better spent at another gym.
That's smart, too, to actually think about that. That's great. On the show with us this week is etiquette expert, advisor, and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. Make sure to check her out on Twitter, at School Finishing. Now, I have to bring this up because you did. Regarding the naked parade that certain individuals, you know, choose to do, what can you do, I guess, as an innocent bystander when you are exposed to someone who continually, you know, prances around in their birthday suit? Because I this happened to me just before Christmas, and it was shocking. Like, this naked lady decided that she should parade over to the scale, and she got on the scale naked. I'm like, everyone uses, like, I don't, thank God, but everyone uses that scale, and I'm like, you are just, everything's there for all to see, not even a towel.
Yeah. It's funny how there's certainly comfort levels ranging.
Yes.
In the gym, and certainly the change rooms. Avert your eyes.
Okay.
As far as that person's concerned, that's their normal gym routine. So, yeah, they might want to hop on the scale naked. Maybe they're concerned about a pair of socks adding a couple ounces to their weight. But avert your eyes and just worry about yourself. I think we often confuse good etiquette with the desire to correct other people's behavior. And that's not what it's about. People can carry on and tick us off and irritate us all the time. It's not up to us to police other people. But in an instance like that, I think the best thing is just to avert your eyes.
Okay.
And not get too hung up on it.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I know that there's that, and then there's like the whole other ball game when they go to the showers. Like, it's just a whole, it's very disruptive.
Whole other ball game.
Yeah, whole other ball game. So then just before I let you go, just to sort of, I guess, wrap things up, what would be your one key point, I guess, just to leave people with when it comes to gym etiquette? Because I think it really, like, yes, you are there, and I'm glad you mentioned off the top that it's like an insular thing, like you are there for you, for your health, and you can get in a bubble. But I think sometimes you have to realize you can't be in a bubble because you are in a shared space.
Right. So it's a communal space at the end of the day. Everyone who is in that gym deserves to be there just as much as anybody else. So there's no first class, there's no hierarchy, there's no tier. So be respectful of everyone else's space. Don't treat it like your living room and don't treat it like your washroom. And be mindful of that and how your behavior is affecting the other people around you. The best thing is to model great behavior yourself.
Excellent. Thank you. Karen, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
That's etiquette expert again, advisor and blogger with SheDoesTheCity.com, Karen Cleveland. Again, check her out on Twitter, @SchoolFinishing.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
The world of celebrity is vast and far-reaching, and even though so many of us proudly announce to the world that we don't care what Hollywood is doing, the truth is, on some level, we are curious. It's like watching a train wreck. You don't want to look, but you do. Well, someone who actually chooses to stay in the know about what the stars are doing and then report back to us is celebrity blogger Mark Andrew. Mark, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Mark, before we get into your sort of daily grind with the blogging and your website, how did you actually get into this business? Did you always have a passion for celebrity?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't sing, I don't act, but I'm a big fan as far back as I can remember, actually. I've always wanted to reach out and connect with these artistic heroes of mine. I remember back in the day sending questions into Music Plus when they used to have the contest for the artist du mois program. I'd win. I'd get the chance to come into the studio and actually ask questions live to these artists. So that's how it really all started.
How did you actually get the idea to start your own blog and celebrity website, markandrew.ca?
That's pretty simple, too. I was working at the Gazette. I started with an entry job there. And I was also working at the Concordia University. I just was bringing in big names to the newspaper at the school, first off. And I was told that from somebody at school, one of the profs there, that basically all you need are connections in this industry. And they told me that the names I was bringing to the campus press was unheard of. So I just thought I would go out there and try with my name since I wasn't really working for a big corporation.
With regards to those connections, was it hit or miss? Did you have to just start sort of somewhere and then, you know, you did a good interview and then that person remembered you? Is that how you've sort of built up your connections?
Oh, I started from ground zero. I had absolutely no connections. So it was a lot of networking. I did have a really great opportunity, though, from Sony Music. I was approached to interview two bands, Anti-Flag and Billy Talent at the Bell Center. So that kind of launched everything off for me.
And how important are these connections for you? Is it how you get most of your information, or at least most of your access to interviewing celebrities?
Absolutely. There's no other way to it, really. I mean, you have to. It's a popularity contest as well. If people don't like you, you won't get the interviews.
Now, how do your days actually roll out? Do you have, you know, I guess, sources around the world where you get your information? Do you spend hours on the net, you know, tracking down these leads and then continuing to make the calls to actually get the interviews?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of researching done. I'm looking up contacts. I'm looking up information on these artists. So I do spend a lot of time doing research.
And something that actually intrigues me about you is the fact that you don't live in Los Angeles, New York, or even in London. You live and work here in Montreal, Canada. Is it hard for you to stay on top of the celebrity scene because you're not physically located in any of these hotspots?
It can be difficult, but today we're very lucky that we've got Skype. And a lot of the actors really don't mind, you know, talking to me from their living room or just phone calls.
Joining us on the show is celebrity blogger Mark Andrew. Make sure to check him out, markandrew.ca. Can you give us an idea of some of the stars that you've actually interviewed, Mark?
Absolutely. Alanis Morissette, for example. I've spoken with Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, Drake. In the movie world, actually, I'm really liking Bomb Girls right now on Global, so I reached out to those people, and I got to speak with Meg Tilly. which was a lot of fun. She's pretty legendary.
Mm-hmm. And just for example, like if someone's sitting at home, you know, listening to this, for example, reaching out to that specific show and then getting that specific actress, did you, again, just go in blind or is it that you have connections now or did you actually just reach out to the network in the States?
Yeah, I looked up the show, found out who the publicists were, and fired off emails and just hoped for the best.
And do you get a lot of rejections, Mark? Like, is it something you've had to get over and then just keep sort of plugging away?
Yeah, it can happen, especially at the very beginning when I didn't have other names backing me up on the content already on the website. But now having the content up there and backing me up, it helps a lot. So it's been a little while. But yeah, at the very beginning, I did get the cold shoulder here and there, no responses, period. And, but you know, you're not really losing anything when you're sending out these emails and these requests.
Now, have you had mostly positive experiences with celebrities?
I'd say I'm very, very lucky. I've heard horror stories, but I've been very, very lucky. I remember interviewing Ashley McIsaac, and I've heard that he's barked during interviews when he hasn't liked questions. And I called him on a Sunday morning. His publicist failed to let him know, and I was horrified. But it ran over smoothly. I was very, very lucky.
What has been your favorite, I guess, interview to date? Because it seems like you've sort of run through a lot of them.
I have so many favorites for many different reasons. I'd have to say Lady Gaga because that was simply a milestone. I think she's a smart, ambitious woman, and that was a pleasure to speak with her. Tori Amos, for example, was a dream come true. I met her backstage one-on-one after a show, and the only reason why I met her is because she requested after a phone interview previewing that specific show.
Wow, that's amazing. So that's a positive experience. And I have to ask you as well, because you are, you know, a celebrity blogger, as a person who covers, you know, these celebrities on your blog, do you have a kinship with sort of other celebrity bloggers like a Perez Hilton? I know he's kind of got a bit more mainstream, obviously. Or do you feel more competitive with them?
I don't think I feel competitive, although I don't really speak with too many other bloggers, actually. I try not to. I don't really want to take from them, or I do read about them a lot, that's for sure. I do my homework on other bloggers, but I'm not really in contact with other people doing what I do.
Joining us on the show is celebrity blogger Mark Andrew again. Make sure to check him out, markandrew.ca. Mark, you just actually celebrated your first year anniversary of markandrew.ca. What has been your, I guess, most challenging obstacle this past year, and I guess also the most rewarding experience?
Ooh, challenging. Not having a typical 9-to-5, there's a lot of self-discipline involved in this. Having a lot of support and understanding from friends, family, and significant others is really important too. When the sites first started out, it took up a lot of my time. So my social life got put on hold. So that was a challenge. Aside from that, I think I'm very pleased with the amount of traffic that's been coming to my site. That was very rewarding, knowing that these people are visiting my website, wanting to hear about my experiences with these artists, and letting me bring them closer to the artists I speak with.
And now you mentioned just a few moments ago about how your social life sort of went down the tubes. Is it difficult, I guess, to sort of get into that mind frame where you just had to sort of put everything to the side and you just had to focus? Or did you realize to be successful, you were just going to have to do it this way?
Absolutely. It's all about prioritizing. And I think, like I said, my friends were very understanding, so that helped a lot. But yeah, I knew what I had to do. I set my goals, and I just laid it out in front of me and went for it.
Now, as a celebrity blogger, are you sort of subsisting financially off this? Like, can you survive, or do you actually have to have another job?
I am surviving off that right now.
That's fantastic.
I am surviving off it, but it's hard. Just like I was mentioning before, you have to have the discipline. It's not your typical 9-to-5. The hours are long. The hours can be late. You're running on other people's schedules.
And do you actually travel quite a bit, or do you stay based mainly out of Montreal?
Based out of Montreal. I occasionally go to Toronto, as it's the music mecca of Canada right now. Maybe New York once in a while.
You know, you have a lot of sections on your blog, including the celebrity playlist and fast talk. Do you actually come up with all these sections on your own? And do you have to keep coming up with new ideas to make your site sort of bigger and better and keep making it interesting to your followers?
I have come up with most of my ideas. It is the 1 year anniversary now, so I do want to create something new. So I will be fishing online, searching for inspiration, maybe even getting feedback from some of the artists that I speak to, see what they want to put out there for their fans.
Where do you actually see yourself going in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months with markandrew.ca? Because I know in this day and age, like, you know, maybe previously, like 5 years ago, I could ask you, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But everything is moving so quickly. It's almost like I just need to ask you what you think you're going to be doing next year with the website, with the blog.
I think video would be the next step. I think a lot of people are jumping on that bus. So I think that's what I'm going to be working on.
Fantastic. And if you had to give any advice to someone out there who is interested in what you do, what would you tell them? Because as you mentioned, I think the key theme I'm hearing right now is a lot of self-discipline.
A lot of self-discipline. Don't go in this if you're aiming for fame and money, because that'll take a while. And if you're starting up your blog or website, get a programmer or a designer. I think that's key. You want to be a little different than the next person out there, and I think it's a very good investment.
And also I wanted to ask you as well, because with your celebrity blog, obviously it's language, it's words that you're typing. Do you, and I know you mentioned maybe getting into video, do you ever want to expand beyond sort of words and video? Would you maybe want to be in an audio platform as well? Like, are you looking at all different sort of options?
I am looking at all sorts of different options. I'm going to have to do a lot of practicing, though. I'm inexperienced in video as well as audio, so baby steps, I think. But I am going to look into that for sure.
And how do you feel, actually, as well, about social media? Like, has that been just so important for you to get the word out about your website? Because I know from my show, even, Facebook and Twitter have proved to be invaluable.
Absolutely. Making blasts about these articles on those social network platforms, it's been a blessing. I mean, I don't think I'd be able to do it without them.
That's fantastic. And Mark, is there anything that you'd like to leave us with regards to where you're going with markandrew.ca?
Keep on checking me out this year. I want to thank everyone for the support. And 2012, I promise bigger, better, and badder.
Awesome. Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the show this week. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
That's celebrity blogger Mark Andrew again. Make sure to check him out, markandrew.ca.
Bring on the Remix.
That's Jennifer Lopez with Poppy, remixed by Mix and Mark and Tony Sveggia on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, as always, the show would not be the same without my most excellent guests, so a big thank you going out to Frank B. Kermit, Karen Cleveland, as well as Mark Andrew. Here, by the way, is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from legendary basketball coach Rick Pitino. Excellence is the unlimited ability to improve the quality of what you have to offer. Now, next week on the show, we will be speaking with almost Mother of the Year, Casey Savage, on how important transportation is for a family of five. Essentially, that means we're going to discuss the art of trying to find a cool minivan. So make sure you join us. By the way, any comments or questions, don't forget, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.